All right, everyone. Good morning, still the morning. I want to thank Yaron for setting up the stage today and organizing all this open media dev room. My name is Romain Boxis. I'm a software engineer. I've been working in the field for about 10 years, a little bit more. And today I'm going to try to talk about how you bridge the gap between Web Browser's API and what you do in the server and the backend. So that's our plan. So yeah, nowadays the web in the past 20 years has become very, very rich in features and particularly in media. And it's also becoming the number one software that people really have installed and where they do most of their work. It's getting more and more rare to install third-party applications. So we can do a lot of things in browsers, but not everything can be done. We have a lot of API for manipulating media that are listed here. But there are some interesting challenges when you want to do a really state-of-the-art in-browser specific experience. And so what I'm going to build today is very specific examples that I've learned in the past 6 months since I started my current position, which I'm going to explain in the next slides. So my background is I studied media and streaming in college. I was at l'École Centrale where VLC was at the time. Jean-Baptiste also will talk after me and was there. Then I did some open source contribution with Liquid Soap, and I'm trying to contribute to FFmpeg. But all of that was my non-professional career, and then the other part of it was web. I did a lot of website building, rich application, a lot of things. But recently I started a current role where I got hired to work on a web application that is actually also very media rich. And it was very exciting to be able to bridge those two gaps and see how these two worlds can interact. And that's where I based all the topics of discussion for this talk. So Descript, the website that I work for, is a online video editor. It's basically a web application. You can go, you can upload your files, you can compose them, you can add text, put some effects, and export that as a video. So you know, it's the same space as like Premiere or other things, but it's all web. It started originally as a text base, so you would upload a file, audio file, and then edit the text, and the audio would be cut, and then evolve for video, and had a lot of features. In particular, in recent years, they incorporated a AI research team and started having their own effects that does, like, you know, background removal, eye contact to follow the camera, and those effects are done in the background typically. So you're starting to see that we have an application that's very rich, that does a lot of things, and some of it has to be done in the server, some of it has to be done in the client. The other thing I want to highlight is that, specifically to the web, a web application functions essentially very differently than a normal application. And one of the things you can think about is that you have a whole class of execution context. You can have a different browsers, a different OS, so you can be Chrome on iOS, you can be Firefox on Linux, you can be Safari, would be macOS too. Also, you can have different tabs. You might want to do the same projects open in two different tabs or in different browsers, or you might want to collaborate, saying that I'm using Chrome on Linux, but I'm sharing that project with my colleague who has, you know, Safari on Mac, and I want both of them to have a good user experience in the browser. And that's where the real complexity comes in terms of doing that. So yeah, that's the full stack media editor, and how do you make that work in a context of browsers. So I'm going to focus on a very subset of the features, because there are a lot of features. I'm going to focus on how you ingest media, display them to the user, and export them at the end. So the first thing we're going to start looking at is what are the capabilities in a browser to ingest media. So imagine that it's a really user-oriented application. Most of the users are not software developers. They don't know a lot of media. They might upload very large files of very exotic formats, and they expect everything to work very rapidly. So we have all these APIs that can be used, the web codecs. We have the web audio API. We have the web GL for composition. But how do you maintain a consistent UX user experience across different browsers, platforms, and collaborative sessions? So typically, here's one example. Codec support is very different across browsers. And we want to support all of that. We want really our user to be able to upload their Matroska files or their MOV files or their AAC, Opus, whatever they have, but we want to support it in the browser. Unfortunately, the range of things that the browser will support is extremely unpredictable. Chrome on WebKit, macOS might support things it doesn't support on Linux. So we're going to receive all these files and have to decide what to do with them. On the contrary, you can see backend things like FFmpeg would be able to process pretty much anything if we compile it correctly. And on top of that, the set of codecs that we can use inside the web codecs to decode hardware is even more limited than what you might support. So some of them are supported in WebRTC, but are not in web codecs. So it's just a lot. But what we really want to try to do is try to take advantage of the native encoding API when they exist so that we can at least leverage the part of the web API that are relevant and then use in the backend when we can or when we need to. So it's not just codec, it's also containers. So remember, you have the way you encode the data for audio and video, but then you have the way you store it in those big boxes. Matroska, MOV, a lot of them. And same thing, they are not all supported. And even worse than that, there's actually no support for demuxing in the browser. So let's say you receive a Matroska, which is not supported, or an MPEG-TS, which is not supported, but you still have H.264 in it that you can decode natively in the browser. You still need to be able to access that packet of data, send it to the browser to decode, and then display the frame back. So how you do that is a question that we're going to address typically. That's one of the examples where we can bridge gaps between browser's API and backend API. So first of all, you got to think about the web codecs, audio decoding and video decoding APIs. So those are native to the browser. And they use array buffer that are basically chunk of memories that you can decode natively. The same exists for video. That's the one we hear. And that's what we're going to use. But what we want to be able to do is, how can we access that chunk of data that's stored in a Matroska file when we don't have a native support for it? And that's, we'll see that in a minute. So yeah, that's one of the problems we have is your user starts sending a lot of files in your application, very exotic formats. Some of them we could decode natively, but they are in certain form of containers that are not natively supported by the web API. How do you bridge that gap? So that's one example we're going to see right next here. And the solution, as you can see, is to leverage WASM, compilation of technologies that are essentially backend, but to lift them into the browser so you can start executing bridge the gap between what the web offers and what you have typically in the backend, which is FFmpeg demuxing capabilities, but this time you lift them in the client. So I'm going to, that was an presentation of the kind of technologies that are in the browser. So the next, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot. The last thing we need to do, and it's also important, we also need to do renders. So you have your video, right? And you're composing those videos, you're adding different layers on it, you want some text. What we're going to do, we're going to leverage the WebGL composition. I might do a little bit faster on that because of time limitation, but that's the last part of the application. And this also is challenging, particularly because, remember, we want to add text. That's a perfect example of something that you would think is simple and actually turns out pretty hard. Because when you add text, you have things like that. I said we want to be able to do a collaborative session. So I am working on macOS, and I'm using adding emojis on my browser's renders with the local system font. But my colleague is on Android or Windows and has different emoji fonts, and it starts looking differently. How do you do that, too? So I'm going to run through some examples of how we did that. It's going to have to be a little bit quick because of time limit, but I hope this will be insightful. At least I find that interesting when I was working. So the first challenge is, how do we seek when the user uploads a file? So let's say I'm uploading a file that comes from a screen recording, smartphone videos. Those files can have a wide range of codec parameters, and one of them is it's going to have a very unpredictable frame rate. Remember, like, the keyframe, sorry, that's what I mean. So you have keyframe space at very different places, and you want to be able to sync very fast. So the user experience in the application is, I'm editing my video and I want to zoom to 4.8 seconds, 5.2 seconds, and I want the application to react very quickly. But how do you do that in the way that's the best possible? What you have to do really is that you have to know where the keyframes are exactly in your media. So if you want to go to 5.2, but your last keyframe is 4.8, you need to be able to know that this is your keyframe, sync right into it, and decode immediately there to give yourself the best chance to be as fast as possible in your syncing. But the browser cannot do that because the browser doesn't have demuxing capacities, as I was saying. So how do you do that without having the native API is a good example. So what you would do is you lift up the WASM build of a backend library. Here we can say FFmpeg. So you open your file with FFmpeg. You scan all the keyframes inside the file so you know that that's where your keyframe is. And then you sync with it using FFmpeg. You move past and you get exactly to the frame you want, and that's the point where you're going to submit to the browser. So first step, you extract the timing. Then you sync to that keyframe at 4.8. Second thing, you read the packets until you get to your frame, and then you take over with the native browser API, render it, and eventually display it on the frame on the screen. So that's the last step. You can see you have this copy this packet that's available. You copy it back to your JavaScript memory. It's that packet.data at line 14. Pass that to the video chunk, decode it natively. That way you bridge the gap between what is available in the browsers and what is available typically as a backend. Another example, and I'm probably just going to have time for that, is when browser processing is not enough, you want to offload to a backend infrastructure. So as I was saying, we have our users throwing a lot of media at us. And some of it we can decode and have that kind of experience as just described. Some of it we cannot because it's a codec that's not supported because many reasons. And in this case, what we want to do is we want to be able to send that to a server and retrieve transcoded media immediately that are usable. Typically, they're going to have a high keyframe rate. We're going to also shrink the resolution because if they're editing on their screen, they don't need a 4K video. And we can, that's the time we can add all the server-side background removal, eye contact, and etc. So the second piece of media, of technology that we do in this case is this scenario, which adds a lot of complexity to the application. Basically, it's a user experience application that we want to be friendly. So we really want things to work as quickly as possible. So the way the scenario works is you upload your files, and or you put your files in the web application, and they start displaying using the native capacity of your browser, if possible, as we just described for syncing. Meanwhile, we start uploading in the background, and when the file is fully uploaded, we are ready to hit it up with the backend server, and we switch immediately to a chunk of media that have been transcoded on demand just for you, and are really like in a codec that's supported, in an encapsulation container that's supported, and then your experience become better. But that adds a lot of complexity because it means that you have a first kind of degraded experience in the application while your files are uploading, that we kind of do what we can, and then immediately switch to what we fully can do with the application once your file is uploaded. So that's the second piece, is if you can't really bridge the gap in the browser, you bridge the gap with the backend service that kicks out as early as you can. That's the one we call this Media Transform Server. So that server is implemented and works. It's a tiny FFI layer on top of FFmpeg, the libraries. It produces MP4 segment. It's dynamically generated because there's a lot of parameters that change as you edit your video, but we're also experimenting with pre-segmenting for caching. That's the second piece of the puzzle. I might have 1 minute to talk about the last piece, which is more of an open question. Remember I was saying we use composition with GL, with Web GPU or Web GL to do the final, you know, composition of the canvas into a rendered frame with text and everything. One thing that is still a challenge is how do you do the composition in a way that remember, is described in the browser but needs to be rendered in the backend if possible, because in the backend we may have higher quality, we can do the rendering while the client's doing something else. But the client has been describing their video in the browser, so when you start kicking it out in the server, you have different font, but you also don't have the web API. So one of the challenges that we are thinking of at the moment is how do you do that and translate that? And one of the ideas we have is to use the WGPU stack, because it's a stack that's natively implemented in Rust that supports the web GPU. And it exports to native Vulkan in Linux, but also web GPU on the web. So the kind of challenge we're thinking in the future is, can we rewrite the rendering so the composition is described in this stack in a way that that can be rendered both in the browser and in the backend in a way that's consistent and looks the same for everyone. Thank you. That was a lot to present, so appreciate it. I hope that will help you. What FFI? There is a node module that's called FFI-RS. Or, yeah, what FFI do you use to interface with FFmpeg? So there is a node binding, that's a node module that's called FFI-RS or the opposite, and it's a Rust tiny layer on top of the libFFI that provides like a TypeScript safe, you know, way to interact with FFI. No, yes. The binding itself is really Rust, but all the rest of the stack is TypeScript, so we got to plug right into that. All right, if there's no more question, I will yield the floor, and thank you guys again.